from Wurundjeri land. This is Life Matters. I'm Beverly Wang. And the question is, how do you get on with people when you have a fundamental clash in values? I'm not talking about strangers on Twitter or Facebook. I'm talking about real people in our lives, siblings, parents, in-laws, friends, grandparents, all of them. When your priorities don't align, but you are bound together in a close relationship, how do you figure it out? Let's talk. So let's break the ice. I'm going to share my story first. When I was on maternity leave a few years ago, someone very close to me made the assumption that I wouldn't return to my job at the ABC because now that I was a mother, they told me I could get a, quote, little job, their words. Now, that person is in my life and I care about them very much, but obviously I didn't quit the ABC and obviously years later, I haven't forgotten that comment either. And it stayed with me because I think it drew a line under some fundamental values that clashed, you know, a little comment that revealed how differently we thought about motherhood and work and even other issues like money and how to earn a living. Has that ever happened to you where you just can't let go of a passing comment because it's hit a nerve? I think it's even harder to let go of when it's from someone who's a big part of your life. And I also want to welcome Dr. Zoe Krupka to the conversation. Zoe is a psychotherapist and senior lecturer in counseling and psychotherapy at the Canmiller Institute at La Trobe University. Zoe, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you for having me, Beverly.
It's great to have you. And that anecdote I shared just now, to me, I feel like that's something that I'm calling an iceberg comment because it's a little surface comment that you think flits away. But underneath it, it actually shows what the values are tied into and it goes so deep. And I think also my reaction hit my own iceberg as well because it made me think and feel all sorts of things and I'm still remembering it. Have you got a similar experience to share?
I do, actually. I mean, I have a very old friend who became really, I think, a fundamentalist Christian and really rejected me when I was quite young and coming out as bi. And like this person in your life, Beverly, she's still in my life. But this is, you know, a kind of an ongoing wound between us. And I have her at a much greater distance from me than let's say I would have when I was a teenager, but it's still painful, like the iceberg comment you're talking about, and it's still painful because it's not just about a clash of values, but about you know, when I think about your story, it's about, don't you even know me?
Yes.
Who do you think I am? Mm-hmm. And that's really painful in close relationships.
I think that's really important when you realize perhaps that you have not been seen or heard in the way that you want to be, and it's someone who's close to you. Like you say, that's a wound. But I think so many of us can relate to that, and these aren't situations where you can simply say, I'm going to block you on social media. I'm not going to respond to your text. These are people who are close with us. They could be parents. They could be aunts and uncles. They're people that we love, but yet we have this clash. So I wonder, how often do you encounter these situations from, you know, generally speaking, from people that you speak to? And what are, I suppose, the impacts of that?
I mean, I think you could probably say, I could make the generalization that this is the kind of relationship problem that most people come into therapy with. And that's, you know, what you're talking about or I'm talking about, the pain of not being understood, the pain of kind of negotiating difference in relationship. And the impacts are really significant because also these take really high levels of interpersonal and emotional skill to work through. They're really difficult. Like you say, this is an iceberg and there's a lot of material under the surface. So they're tricky. They're really tricky to talk through and to work out with especially the people dearest to us.
Well, we were talking about this in the Life Matters office, and so many examples that we came up with as a small group. You know, for example, the parent who makes the grandparent who might make a passing comment about a grandchild, a boy, playing with girls' toys and vice versa. That seems like a casual comment, but it has descended into a huge row with the mother of the child. You know, the big family gatherings. Just think about Christmas lunch. I know it's months away, but when all of the family members that you might just only see once a year, aunts, uncles, children, grandparents, partners, everybody, and that dread of being sat next to, say, the racist uncle. We all have one in a family, so, you know.
Yeah. Yes.
And how you manage that, and also the relationship management then becomes a part of that not being seen. Not only are you not seen and heard, but you also have to minimize conflict. That's so tricky.
It is really tricky. And I think, you know, what you're really saying that's really important, I think, is that how we deal with this is as important as what we argue over. So when you're talking about, let's say, the passing, you know, comment on boys playing with girls' toys or whatever heteronormative thing it is, or your racist uncle, it's like, this isn't just a clash of values. This is about, well, how do I raise this? Where do I raise this? Where am I setting a boundary? What's a deal breaker? Do I have courage in that moment actually to turn to him and to say something publicly at a family gathering? You know, what are my skills like in terms of dealing with this? Because these are kind of all the whiskers around that value clash. Like you say, it's really easy to write someone off that you don't know very well or on Twitter, but people who are close to you, you really have to engage, and engage with more integrity and maybe even more vulnerability than most of us are really comfortable with.
Right. And then you bring all the baggage of your existing relationship into that.
We are
taking, yes, it's the iceberg. I think that's the word of the day. I'm here, Zoe is here, and we're talking about those value clash conversations. If we could, just for the moment, I know, Zoe, you say it's more than the values, but if we could just drill down on the values, because they are so fundamental to us. First of all, what do we mean when we talk about values, and why are they so important to us that they do sort of hit this nerve when someone's, you know, steps on that third rail of something that's important to us?
They are so important because they are the drivers of all of our decisions, really, in the world and in relationships. I mean, you know, when organizations put their values on the wall, maybe the ABC has them. They rarely follow them, of course. This is a big bone of contention. But our values are in that iceberg. There, a lot of them are under the surface. We're not always really conscious of them. But we learn them in our really formative years at home, at school, in our culture, and they really drive us. So, you know, if, for instance, I value honesty maybe more than loyalty, and let's say, you know, my lover values loyalty over honesty, this is really going to change how we respond to the racist uncle, for instance. And we're going to wound each other with those clashes around decisions, maybe sometimes without even knowing that it's a values-driven clash that we're having.
And how do you work out then? I think sometimes what's interesting about these conversations is that you might not even realize what has been bumped into by that iceberg until you examine that wound. And I wonder, of course, you know, these values also inform our religious, our spiritual, our philosophical and political beliefs. And how might we be able to interpret someone's values from the political beliefs they hold?
I think you can usually drill down from any kind of simple decision, kind of from recycling to speaking up at dinner, to what might be driving that. And that's also why we react to it so much. If you look at, you know, the debate, let's say, over people who didn't want to get vaccinated, you know, we are looking at, you know, micro and macro decisions being driven by, let's say, the difference between, individual autonomy and care and collective responsibility. And you can see that there are significant differences between people in how they value that. I think the hard thing when we're discussing it with people that we love is to be vulnerable enough to say, you know, this really hurts me. And this is the impact it has on me when you say that, as opposed to, you know, let me tear down everything you think is sacred in an effort to feel better, you know, if that makes sense.
Is it, would you class these moments or these wounds under the umbrella of microaggressions, Zoe?
They can absolutely be, yes. Values clashes are not, free of other associations. So, you know, you're right. Like, to say you can go and get a little job, that's not just a values clash. Yeah, that has a whole kind of socio-political framework around it about your value as a person, as a parent, as a woman in the world. It has a whole kind of history behind it. And so, you know, it's also never as simple as this is, we just think differently, Beverly. It's more than that.
Mm. We've got a text in from someone who's texting and sharing about a situation that has caused great pain. And they've written, I have a friend, not a best friend, but someone I've known for 40 years. I also work part-time for him. Over a couple of drinks, I thought I could trust him, and I told him that I was HIV positive. He went back to his brother, whom I have known for the same amount of time, and said, quote, I hope you haven't slept with him because he has AIDS. This was conveyed to me by his brother. I haven't forgotten this, and I'm still furious. And I'm commiserations to the texter. I think I would be furious if I was in that position as well. Zoe, yes. What do you think about? Is this even in the framework of an iceberg comment, or is this something beyond?
Well, it sounds like it's actually a number of things. I mean, one, of course, you know, ignorance, the homophobia, but also, you know, maybe a value or a fundamental way of being that, you know, believes in sort of individual rights of, let's say, free speech. But I think, you know, one of the things that happens in a situation like that, when you're talking about how to negotiate it in relationships, and it sounds like the text is kind of coming up against that as well, is how do I respond to that? And do I need to offer somebody who behaves in that way towards me the respect of a civil conversation? And I would say that the answer to that a lot of the times is no.
Mm. But what about, Zoe, I'm just thinking about this texter, and really the what has been said is untrue, and it's homophobic, it's terrible. I mean, there must be an impulse to want to say something, but is it always the best situation to raise? I know we're all about open and frank conversations on Life Matters, but sometimes things may not, you know, a conversation may not actually lead to the result that you want, and it could actually lead to even greater harm.
That's true, and maybe even harm to you, or to, in this case, your texter. I think that's when we're really trying to draw on our own values, because they're also aspirational values. We don't always, you know, meet them or reach them. And so, you know, if I'm in that position of that texter, I'm also thinking about living a life I can be proud of. I mean, to me, this is what values are for. And so I'm thinking, do I need to raise this, whether it's going to have an impact positively or not, just for my own sense of not needing to carry, you know, my own frustration or regret at not having spoken? Or would it be better for me to not say anything and withdraw because I don't want to put my energy there? This is going to be different for all of us, not just because of our values, but because of our history. Mm. You know, I think we all know what it's like to regret not speaking up or to regret speaking up and, you know, fomenting more conflict. And we can let those regrets kind of direct what we do in the future. They're useful teachers.
Really appreciate your wisdom there, Zoe, on that. I'm nodding myself listening to that. Let's go to Shirley in the Blue Mountains. Shirley, you had a moment with a friend that kind of has lingered with you. Tell us about that moment.
Well, what happened was that I've been very sick and just a sort of a dental abscess, you know, and been really sick for weeks. And there was this film called Ablaze, which is screening at the moment on ABC iView, I'm very proud to say. And I had watched it on iView and decided that it was really important to go along to this screening in Mount Flixflix. And so I went along there, even though I still wasn't really feeling better. And so I ran into, and I had this feeling that this was going to happen to me, that I was going to run into somebody there who was going to say, oh, you're looking really well. And I was thinking, well, how will I respond to that? And it actually happened that I got a text from a friend who said, so glad to see you looking so well and happy. And I thought, well, yeah, I'm definitely not well, but that doesn't really matter because I will get better. But happy after watching that film, Ablaze, which describes the most appalling treatment of our original people of this land, and it shows you that my friend, who admits that she doesn't really care about most sort of doing anything in the world, she just wants to enjoy herself. And so she sent me this message saying, you know, glad to see you looking well and happy. And I thought, I have been thinking about it ever since.
That's so interesting, Shirley, isn't it? Because it's just a casual comment probably from your friend who texted and thought, well, my intentions were good, but it really rubbed you the wrong way.
Well, it's not so much, you know, it's not so much about me, my personal feelings, but what it has done, which is really positive for me, is, and thank you for your piece this morning. It's brilliant. It's really helped me. I've just decided, well, I don't know if I want to continue this friendship. Is it a friendship? But I tell you what, for the rest of my life, I'm going to do everything that I can to help, to bring justice and joy and happiness and all good things to this situation, because I need to make that change.
Thank you so much for your call, Shirley. And Zoe, isn't that an interesting result that actually these conflicts can help us crystallize our core values and help us see clearly and move with clarity about what we do want to do and what our purpose is?
Absolutely. And, you know, and that's one of the key things that Shirley raised so well here, I think, is how we can kind of skate over these significant value differences in relationships, and then they can come to the surface, just like in your story, Beverly, with the wounding of, who do you think I am? do you even know me? And the real pain of that, and that can really be a catalyst for, you know, as Shirley says, not just rethinking, should I be in this relationship, but also reconnecting us to, oh, this is actually, you know, a big part of my value and purpose in the world, and I'm recommitting to that. It's quite extraordinary what she shared.
Were you saying these are iceberg conversations, those moments with close people in your lives where, you know, they might say something that seems quite innocent, but actually it stays with you and it wounds you and it can clarify, as it did for Shirley, or it can cause a lot of conflict. Sarah in Canberra, what's your story?
Well, I'm not a very conflict, I'm conflict averse, and so I tend to let people get away with things that I find a bit upsetting. But so when it's gone on and on and on, I have recently summoned courage and told a couple of people, like my stepdaughter and one of my sisters, that I find this behaviour upsetting. And what's really been remarkable to me is that when I've said, this is why these things are upsetting me, they discount the reality of that and really push back very hard. And I think this is something that I've also experienced with people who've been in well, abusive relationships, that when the person who has suffered puts up their hand and says stop, people around them don't want to hear that. Does that ring any bells with you?
Zoe, your thoughts?
Yeah, it does, absolutely, because I think one of the things you're talking about, Sarah, is not just kind of general values, but also coming up against how much value is this person placing on our relationship, or maybe how important our relationships to them in general. And when we start to have these conversations, you know, as you're saying, the fundamental starting point is that we do have to be able to listen and hear what's really difficult, which is, how have I hurt you? But I think if we can't do that, then almost I would say, I know it sounds, you know, but you're kind of saying it here too, Sarah, almost we can't really have a relationship then if we can't hear that from each other.
Yeah, I mean, my story is that my paternal grandmother always pretended that I didn't exist. So if I spoke to her, she wouldn't respond to me. She'd respond to somebody else in the room, that sort of thing. And so my stepdaughter doesn't really like me being part of the family. And on her most recent visit to stay with us, she took lots of photos of her dad with her sons, but I wasn't in a single photo.
So what you do really well there, Sarah, what I really like is that you make the link. You think, okay, this is where I've got the wound today with my stepdaughter, but I also know it's got this long back history of being ignored and written out of the story. And that's such an important thing that we have to do when we're negotiating relationships like this, is to know, what do we bring from the past? And again, that iceberg that you've obviously lifted quite far out of the water.
Sarah, thank you so much for your call. And Zoe, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about not being seen and heard, and in Sarah's case, that it has manifested in a quite a literal way in not being seen or acknowledged in that family space. Let's go to Lynn in New South Wales. Lynn, what is the clash among your family?
Hang on. Sorry, just shifting it to my phone.
No worries.
The clash in my family was over the COVID vaccination stuff, which I think has happened a fair bit.
I think that's a familiar story for many families.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And we had a situation where I've got two grown-up daughters, and my brother's wife became anti-vax. And my younger daughter had a baby, and I'll get emotional about it. My older daughter loves Christmas, so she was trying to encourage them to get vaccinated because she wanted us to spend Christmas together as we normally do. And she sent a text about it, and they took deep offence at the way it was worded, which to me and our side, you know, our side, it didn't seem offensive. We didn't spend Christmas together, and the relationship has been quite fractured since then. Like, I speak to my brother occasionally, but they blame my elder daughter who sent the text, trying to ask them to consider their choices around this, because she was wanting us to have this family time together. And then she even reached out again because there was a suicide in the other side of, in her father's side of the family. And she felt, you know, she wanted to reconcile things. And he initially talked to her, but then ended up sending a big text saying that he's still deeply angry and hurt by what's occurred, and isn't willing. So it's really a clash around, for me, it's around the family values and valuing, you know, keeping those relationships going and being able to forgive and try and reconcile relationships. And I've tried to talk to him about that. I haven't tried to talk to my sister-in-law. Not that I wouldn't, but I just it's a bit of a, I don't know, it's hard to talk to her because she's the one driving a lot of the stuff. My brother ended up getting vaccinated, but she still hasn't. It's just been a really difficult period.
It sounds like it. And I'm so sorry about all the conflict. If this conversation has raised any issues for you, the number for Lifeline is 13 11 14. And I hear so many clashes there in terms of family, in terms of health, in terms of, you know, public safety and our responsibility there. Just as a case study, Zoe, I imagine that the pandemic really has opened up a lot of these core value clashes among family members, and there are many situations like that out there.
Yes, there are. And I think as Lynn kind of describes it, you can see that many people experience this kind of situation, which is kind of, it's not just a values clash. It's like, it's a perfect magnet for all of the old family wounds, because family wounds are, you know, always about who's on the inside, who's on the outside, who gets cared for, who doesn't get cared for, who gets listened to, who doesn't get listened to. And it can really gather all of those things in a ball. And so we're kind of left with them. I mean, there's the gift of being able to deal with them, I suppose, but we're left with quite a long process of teasing those things out that may have not been spoken of for years.
Indeed. Yes. Again, we come back to the old iceberg metaphor. That's Dr. Zoe Krupka. She's a psychotherapist and lecturer at the Canmiller Institute in Melbourne at La Trobe University. We're talking about how those surface comments or small clashes that you have with people in your life can really lead to wider gulfs and chasms, or highlight a kind of a fundamental misalignment of what you believe to be important to yourself, and how that can really just have so many knock-on effects, even about how people see you and whether you're heard. Let's go to Marina in Melbourne. And yours is a bit of a workplace issue, Marina, is that right?
Yes, good morning, ladies. Thank you so much for the program. It's very enjoyable. Makes us think quite deeply, I think, about what we do. So I had an experience at work with an older colleague who I was managing, actually. She made a mistake and she didn't want to own up to the mistake, and it caused quite a significant issue within the team. And I guess you talk about your values and you talk about the values of ownership and integrity, but then what helped me realize through this experience is actually understanding where the person is coming from and why they're reacting the way they're reacting. I think doing that and taking a step back and starting to understand why she reacted in the way she did, and having those deeper conversations and taking the time to have those conversations, actually allowed us to discuss the problem and discuss her reaction. And it took a bit of time and a few conversations, but I mean, in the end, we're friends now. I mean, I don't work there anymore, but we're still friends. And that was purely because I took the time to delve a little bit deeper into what was going on. If that makes sense.
Yeah. No, Marina, this is a great example of actually being able to come together and not be wedged apart by some kind of a value clash or a misunderstanding. How, just to dig a bit deeper with your situation, what was the prompt, you think, that made you step away from feelings to really want to think about it from the other person's perspective?
I was shocked, to be honest, initially by her reaction. And for me, that was a bit of an eye-opener. Maybe I was quite naive to think that people typically, you know, own up when they make mistakes. And her reaction actually initially shocked me. And I think that's what opened up the thought of maybe I need to dwell a little bit deeper and just take the time to understand why and what's going on in her life and what's prompting this sort of reaction. Often people, you know, often people are not reacting because they hate you or because they have certain feelings towards you. Often it's them and the issues that they're facing internally that's causing them to react that way. So I think that the initial shock of the situation prompted me to actually take a step back and ask her some of those questions and have the hard conversation. Not all, it doesn't always work, but in this particular instance, it was remarkable. It actually opened up my eyes on how to react to people. Like,
yes,
we control our own reactions, and that's probably, we're not endorsing that behavior, but we always probably have to take a step back and think, well, why are they behaving this way?
Yeah.
What is it in their culture, in their background, in the way they've been brought up, maybe? We're not endorsing it, but maybe that's why they're reacting the way they're reacting.
Marina,
in
I really appreciate that call. I think that's a nice way to kind of give us some optimism and hope that you can resolve that. And credit to you both for being able to have that conversation, you know, you taking a step back and thinking, and then also the person on the other side of the equation being willing and open to answer your questions. So that's fantastic. Zoe,
thank you, ladies.
Take care. Zoe, let's talk a little bit about resolutions, because Marina has brought us to this point in the conversation. It is important to talk about resolutions. You know, what she did, having that conversation, is a great case study. But how do you weigh up, I suppose, how to approach that resolution? And what would some of your advice be?
Oh, I think that she spoke about that so wonderfully, because, you know, what she talked about really clearly was how do we actually find out what the values are? So we can assume it's a values clash, you know, and in the kind of family get-together example that Lynn brought us, you can see how people are assuming motivation, which is always a disaster. And so Marina's talking about how the process actually looks, which I really like to say, I like that she said, I was shocked, because being shocked is not a bad thing. It's actually where we wake up and go, oh my God, this person is not me. You know, we are not of one mind. And that's the beginning. And then she talks about the next step, which is really, really hard. It's kind of right up there in emotional maturity terms, which is, can I stay curious about why you think that way? And why you feel that way, and can I allow that actually to change my assumption about what you were doing? You know, so if we go back to, God, I hope I don't get people wrong here, but go back to Sarah and the grandmother and the stepdaughter, the motivations of those two people are going to be very different. Because stepchildren so often understandably, you know, resent step-parents for, you know, sometimes good reasons. That's a very different thing than excluding a grandchild. So when we can be really curious about why do you think that way, it really means that we can drill down to what the value actually is. You know, there are people, if we go back to the vaccination thing, who it's very easy to assume you don't care about me, which is very different from I am terrified.
I think that advice of staying curious is really good, because when you have that distance, you take the heat out. It's almost like, in a way, journalism or something like that. It's about just asking the questions and finding out more and investigating. And oftentimes, I think that's a really good way to approach a conversation, is to almost in a way dissociate a little bit, not make it about yourself, but just ask those questions and try to think about it factually through the red mist, let the red mist lift and then keep going. Ali in Marimbula, you, speaking of a bit of a shock, you have had a recent shock recently with a family member, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Recently, my sister-in-law turned 75, and we have a birthday that's only 2 days apart. And when I rang her to say, did you have a lovely birthday? She said, oh, yes, your brother organized a weekend away with 8 people, my brother, his family and friends down at Kings Valley. And I said, oh, I would have loved to have been invited to that. And she said, oh, but your brother Richard organized it. It had nothing to do with me.
Oh, my.
And I said, oh, I understand that, but I am really a bit shocked and I don't know what else to say. And I said, you know, I just think I'll have to go for the moment. So I hung up, and I knew a month later she'd ring, or someone would ring. And again, I just couldn't deal with the conversation because I had felt, I just didn't have the words. And it wasn't to question her. It was really my brother who had done the organization and just completely left me unknowing about the surprise and left us off any invitation. Whether we could have gone or not is irrelevant, but just the shock of finding out that I had been totally left out of the family circle.
That sounds very hurtful, Ali. I wonder, what are the core values or underlying rifts, you think, now that you've thought about it? What do you think that's highlighting for you? How is that clarifying things for you?
Well, it's clarifying that over several years we've had misunderstandings about family values. But in the last 4 years, we've come together. We've had, they've had visits here at my home. They've had their friends who were at this particular gathering come here to share our hospitality. And we've met up, say, two or three times in the last 3 or 4 years. So I felt that any previous problems from the past had been, remained in the past. But I think underneath that, my brother has some resentments or feelings of unresolved issues with me. And I can't ask him because he is quite a macho type of bloke.
That sounds really difficult, Ali, and hope that, things do get better for your family. Zoe Kripka, just any final thoughts as we think about this issue as a whole on how to recognize when these value clashes, these icebergs kind of knock into each other, and how, what to keep in mind in terms of how to proceed going forward?
Well, I think Ali spoke about that well, and you know, the rest of your callers did too, that they've mapped really that trajectory of shock, pain, which is usually, and the thread today is the most common one of feeling excluded and unseen and not valued in relationship, and then moving towards, as Ali did there, a curiosity about what might be happening here, once she was able to kind of sit a bit more with the feeling, then what's my value in this relationship? And, most people talked about the value of kind of connection and repair. What steps might I be able to take to reach out? And like Marina said, be curious. Mm-hmm. And offer an opportunity to be able to negotiate what we might do from here. And, the only other thing I would say about that is that it isn't all about, love and roses at the end. Sometimes there are also, like you talked about with the person who made that comment to you when you went back from maternity leave, sometimes it's also about boundaries, new boundaries in how the relationship will proceed.
I always say it's very helpful to know what somebody else thinks. Dr. Zoe Kripka, thank you so much for your time. Psychotherapist, senior lecturer in counseling and psychotherapy at the Canmiller Institute at La Trobe University.
It's easier than ever to hear your favourite local and national ABC radio stations live and on demand on the ABC Listen app.